Mark Collier here in the Palatial McD Concrete offices. I'm here with Chris McDaniel. Chris is on the Lieutenant Governor ticket with James Comer, and he is also a state senator in the 23rd District out of Taylor Mill. So Chris is going to talk to us about what he's going on right now in the May 19th primary, which is 8 short days away. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. You know, kind of a generous description of the offices here. You know, unfortunately, your listeners can't see, but we still have all kinds of pictures unhung and lack of furniture and everything, but it's good to be here.
The McD Concrete sign is very visible from 275. Mm-hmm. If you've driven past it, I'm really surprised you don't have a big Comer McDaniel sign out there.
Actually, we do on the weekends. Every weekend, we have it raised up in the air pretty high for everybody to see.
So we'll get into some of the issues that are going on with the governor's race right now. But Chris was instrumental in the last General Assembly as a state senator. So I do want to touch on that. Senate Bill 5, you were the sponsor of that bill, which was the heroin bill. We got a morphed version of that. You were on some leadership conference committees. So I guess talk about, you know, we got a heroin bill passed, but talk about that process and being the sponsor, not being the lead sponsor on the final bill and how that kind of all played out.
Sure. So we started working April of 2014 with interested parties to begin to work on it after the last bill failed last year, and spent the whole interim working on it. I was everywhere from here to Louisville, Carroll County, Fayette County, dealing with different parties about what really should be in the bill. Tried to come up with the best compromise possible. We published that and pre-filed it in October of this year.
That was the first...
Or 14.
First bill filed.
I don't think it was the first bill filed, but it was the first bill that I pre-filed. We put that out there, went to the General Assembly. It was the first bill that was passed. We passed it in the organizational week, and sent it over to the House, and it sat there for quite a while as they tried to digest their thoughts. Ultimately ended up in a conference committee, and you know, there was some concern about me being on the Lieutenant Governor ticket on their side, and they didn't want they were concerned about who would or wouldn't get the credit, and frankly, I didn't care who did or didn't get the credit. So they just put it onto a different bill and sent it back, and the interesting dynamic is the primary sponsor of the bill that they sent it back on ended up voting against the bill.
Because it had nothing to do with his original bill.
It had nothing to do with his bill. His bill dealt with medical care and prison medical care providers, and ended up being the heroin bill. So, you know, those are the things that happens in the General Assembly. But I think it was Ronald Reagan said, you can do great things when you don't care who gets the credit. And so... That happened, but at the end of the day, we got it passed.
And you were on the leadership component of that conference committee.
Right. There were four of us from the Senate, and I was one of those four who ended up in the room negotiating the bill.
So what metrics are going to be in place? How are we going to judge this bill in a year from now, whether it's successful or not?
You know, we required a series of reporting mechanisms as part of the bill, either through corrections or through the Cabinet for Health and Family Services, in terms of beds, geographic distribution of beds, neonatal abstinence, peer-enabled recovery, all kinds of things. So there are reporting requirements that either have to come through the Judiciary Committee or through the Health and Welfare Committee, respectively, based off of the particular topic. So we'll begin to see those next year to understand the true impact of the legislation.
Was there anything in the current legislation that was in your bill that you feel was a mistake to leave out?
The biggest thing was while we stiffened penalties for dealers, I would have liked to have had them stiffened a little bit more at the 0-2 level. But there were some people who felt strongly about that, ultimately we got some very stiff upper end penalties. We increased parole requirements, so I was glad to see those things in there. I would have liked to seen a little more directed funding in the jails, because the fact of the matter is that's where a lot of these people come through. It's the first touch, it's the best touch. But once again, there were some folks who felt that was criminalizing an addiction, which, while I didn't necessarily feel that way, that was my point of view. We ultimately settled on a good compromise.
So let's move on to the famed governor's race. It's coming in 8 short days on May 19th. You're 3 people that you're running against. For the most part, as Republicans, you guys see, you know, some of the issues in the same way. I guess, what are some characteristics that you and Jamie have as, you know, leaders on this ticket that are a little bit different than some of your people that you're running against?
Sure. You know, so our ticket, we are in essence 2 small business owners running on a ticket together. He has a 2,000-acre beef cattle operation that now is doing more agricultural, more crop-based work. I obviously have a concrete construction company, and I've been in the General Assembly. He's been in the General Assembly and now served as Ag Commissioner. So we come from a private sector background and both still operate in the private sector every single day. But what's really important, what's really distinguishing about our ticket is we've got a record of accomplishment in the public sector. And doing things in the public sector is much different than doing them in the private sector. And we know how to work the halls of the General Assembly. We know how to craft legislation and get it passed. He has a record of doing so. I have a record of doing so. And nobody else in this race can really claim that. While we have the private sector experience, we also have passed hard legislation before, and we can do it again.
So it sounds like, you know, that's where a lot of your differences lie, is you've done this before. Now, I've heard some ads that some of your people that you're running against, they'll say, you know, I'm not a politician. So I guess you're viewing it as a positive. They're viewing their not being not in the public sector before as a positive. Where do you fall on that?
Well, the fact is, a private sector background is really critical when you go into public service, because we weren't intended to be in these jobs forever, and we won't be in these jobs forever. These seats belong to the people. But that being said, the reason that we're the only ticket that's really come out with in-depth plans for healthcare, for jobs in the economy, for education, for everything in this, is because we really understand the policy that's behind all of this. And so there are those who will try to downgrade the importance of previous political service. But the fact of the matter is, do you want to hire someone who says they can do something, or do you want to hire someone with a track record of doing something? And we have a track record of doing that in the private sector and the public sector.
So we'll talk about your 5-point plan later on down in the interview. That's what Chris has talked about, referenced just before. You've stood in for some debates for Jamie at the NKU forum a couple of weeks ago. What have you learned from that? And are there any questions that you got that you might have answered differently?
You know, I've actually stood in for him at 4 different debates at this point in time, gubernatorial debates. So it's interesting. The biggest thing I've learned is nobody else trusts their lieutenant governor candidate to go to a debate. And on May the 19th, when people check a box, they're voting for 2 people, one person to be governor and one person to be ready to be the governor. And we have a very specific plan for how I will fit into the administration and what I will do there.
So I guess what will you do differently as a lieutenant governor that maybe past lieutenant governors have not been called on to do?
Sure. You know, what we've really seen in the last 8 years is lieutenant governor has been called on to write reports that nobody reads and cut ribbons. And the people of Kentucky pay a lot of money for a lieutenant governor. And so it should be a functioning role within government. And to that end, obviously, right now I chair the Appropriations and Revenue Committee in the Senate. And with Commissioner Comer, when we win the election, I'll be responsible for writing the budget, and then I'll be the Secretary of the Finance and Administration Cabinet, which means I'll oversee how the budget's spent.
Speaking of budgets, the Brent Spence Bridge has been a big issue in Northern Kentucky. Where are you on that? And there was a proposed alternate route that you had talked about at one point. Is that still in play?
Sure. You know, the fact of the matter is this conversation has been stuck on tolls, no tolls, for 6 or 7 years now. And it's not advanced 1 inch since then. And what the commissioner and I have said is we need to go back and look at the initial conversations about this. It's just like we did with heroin. To get a bill passed, we stopped asking what agency should head this. And we asked, At what point in the cycle of addiction are people most likely to respond to an intervention? And with that, we were able to bring a bill out that could pass. The same thing relates to the Brent Spence Bridge. The question, I believe, was asked, how do we replace the Brent Spence Bridge, rather than how do we best facilitate the infrastructure and commerce needs of the Northern Kentucky region for the next three generations? Because the fact of the matter is, whatever we do here, this is going to last for three generations, and we've got to be smart about it. We can't just say, oh, this is the bridge, we're going to fix this bridge. Now, that's part of the solution, certainly. But what it might be, do we need to open some more land up for development in this region? You know, do we need to go in a different direction? And I think we need to revisit the starting point in this, and it would be irresponsible to not do so. I mean, this will be the biggest infrastructure project in the Commonwealth. And it's important to get the answer right. There's a lot of people that want to just charge straight ahead with this blind theory that the answer is to add a bridge right alongside the Brent Spence. But I think that it would be irresponsible to not have that deeper conversation in this, because the fact of the matter is this conversation has stalled for 7 years and no one's been able to generate forward momentum or talk about anything except toll versus no toll. And if we're going to advance the idea of the infrastructure needs of Northern Kentucky, we've got to have that conversation start from that point.
So I guess the alternate proposal that you had talked about basically would come from New Richmond over on that to that parallel of 471.
You know, that kind of came out through some misassumptions, and maybe this is the one area where if you say, did you misspeak on anything in the campaign, the intent is just further east, not necessarily in that particular range. You know, just take a look and what we could do with 71. I don't want to say where it would go exactly, but it's not coming through Fort Thomas. It's not coming through Highland Heights. It's not, you know, the challenges there are too great. It would be far further east than that in my vision. And who knows, maybe west is a better route. Now, I think that the topography is very limiting on that side of town. But we've got to reset this conversation, relook at what we're doing, and make some decisions.
So some of the things that have come out in the last couple of weeks, it's been gotten away from issues. Some negative things have come to light as far as accusations and grand juries and all this kind of thing. There's been a PPP poll that came out. Has you and Jamie still ahead in that? There was an article in the Richmond Register that quoted you as saying that these negative kind of tactics have actually helped you. Talk about that.
Sure. You know, the Courier-Journal ran with a story, very, very negative story, very suspect timing, 2 weeks before a primary election with some allegations that happened almost a quarter century ago. And, of course, the timing has been suspect in people's minds. Really, there's been a lack of genuine firsthand accounts of this. You have an email that's unsigned, from a person who's not been interviewed. And one of the biggest television stations in Louisville, as you alluded to, took on the Courier-Journal for this. The Bowling Green Daily News took the Courier-Journal on for this. And frankly, our supporters just see right through this for what it is. This has been a smear campaign, and we've moved on from it. And the fact is, our people have been more motivated. I have had people, economic conservatives, social conservatives, people that you would consider far to the right of the Republican Party, people that you would consider moderates, across the spectrum. I've had people come up to me and say, this is the worst thing about politics, and we're not going to support it, and we're with you guys. We have seen the negatives of the people putting this out go up substantially. We've seen our positives hold tight. We've had more requests for signs and people wanting to come out and call than we've had the whole campaign. So, you know, ultimately, these are unfortunate things when this happens. But the commissioner and I have been warned for 4 years, be careful who you take on, be careful who you take on. And we've just done what we felt was right. And we've taken on people who, frankly, don't want to see a real change in Frankfort. And they know that if they elect us, there will be. So the blowback, unfortunately, for those who put this out has been on them.
Where do you think the turnout is going to be? You have internal polling numbers. Where parts of the states of the state do you think you're gonna need? And I guess as an all encompassing ribbon on this, does the negative campaigning, is that effective?
So turnout will be between 12% and 15%. And frankly, I think it will be a miracle if it's 15%. Now, what will be critical? Northern Kentucky. If Northern Kentucky turns out at the statewide average, it will be a game changer for this region in terms of how we are viewed. For us, we need Northern Kentucky to turn out and vote for us, because obviously the region where a running mate comes from is very important in a campaign. And then to your question about negative campaigning, sure. If it didn't influence elections, you wouldn't see people do it. Now, the fact of the matter is, we have held tight to our guns. We've not put out any allegations that were not founded. We've not, unfortunately, one of the candidates came in and did that several weeks ago, began running negative ads that he's forced, the Heiner campaign, they were forced to pull their ads off the air because they were not true.
Big deal.
And that is a big deal. I mean, it's a pretty low bar in politics to be forced to pull an ad. And so they, it's been unfortunate that they took it that way, but they did. And hopefully people will see through it.
So I guess to your point of Northern Kentucky being a donor region, right? A lot of the tax revenue goes into Frankfort. Not a lot flows back. Is that a direct result from the low turnout numbers in Northern Kentucky? And how do you stop that as Lieutenant Governor?
Sure. Northern Kentucky, Louisville, Fayette County, any of your urban bases, any of your manufacturing and industry bases will always be donor regions to a degree. That's the nature of the structure of government. However, we've got to have effective return on investment in areas that do generate dollars for the state, because the fact of the matter is, when you invest in areas that can grow industry, your overall tax base and your ability to invest in those other areas is increased. So we will definitely have a focus on investing in areas where there is a solid return on investment for the Commonwealth, be that Northern Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, Western Kentucky, wherever we can get a good return on investment for the dollars of the Commonwealth. Because if we grow the economy as a whole, it gets back to the, rising tide raises all ships. And we'll be able to do that.
You and Jamie probably know this better than anybody on the ticket. You guys are in the public sector right now. I think Nate Silver put out a poll of the most corrupt states in the nation. Is Frankfort corrupt?
I think that there are elements that certainly can be called into question. We see former state representatives on trial for bribing mine officials. We saw Richie Farmer go to jail for his role in the way he was running the Department of Agriculture. There certainly are issues. And we're not going to shy away from those issues, and we're not going to shy away from holding people accountable for them. This gets back to the fundamental tenet of why we're different, is we have a record of achievement. Other people talk about, well, I'm going to clean the mess up. There's only one person who's cleaned up a mess in this race, and that's Commissioner Comer. And I'm the only person on the ticket, and frankly, in state government, elected official, who has a record of stopping contracts for underperforming vendors. I did it several months ago. It's been over 10 years since a member of the General Assembly was able to pull that off, and I was. We had a vendor who was not meeting their obligation to Kentucky, and we pulled and stopped their contract. And so that's something that definitely sets us apart and we'll keep working on.
The corruption that Jamie had to kind of clean up in Richie Farmer's administration, do you think that some of the negative tactics that are being played right now are a result of that?
Absolutely. Same people. They're the same people. They don't want to see, they know there's certain people that don't want to see their power ebb away. And they know it will with us, because we're going to be there. We're going to be vigilant for the taxpayers. We both have too much at stake. We have young kids. We have businesses. We believe in Kentucky. We believe that this can be a great place. And there's no place for the things that were going on in that administration. And unfortunately, some of those folks are still around.
Do you and Jamie differ on any issues? Obviously, you know, you're kind of lockstep. You've stepped in for him at four different debates. Is there anything over the course of the campaign that you guys may have done differently?
You know, I mean, there will always be things of style versus substance. I would say on the substance, we pretty much agree on 99% of things. Style, sure. You know, he may want to invest in TV in a place where I want to invest in mail or some miscellaneous things like that. But for the most part, we recognize that if we're going to move Kentucky forward, we need a solid functioning executive team, and we'll provide that.
So we're going to talk about your 5-point plan that you guys have on your website, which is
your JamesComer.com.
JamesComer.com. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about, I want to ask what you think the most important bullet point on each point is. Sure. So I'll list that, and then you kind of talk about, you know, what you think is the most important. So for a healthier Kentucky, the most important bullet point on the Comer-McDaniel ticket is?
Getting people off of Medicaid. We've got 25% of this state on Medicaid. We need to grow the economy, and we need to get people off of the Medicaid rolls. We have 25% of this state on Medicaid. A sustainable level of 6-8%. We have got to grow this economy. We've got to bring jobs back to Kentucky so that we can get people off of Medicaid and into private insurance. The cost of the expansion of Medicaid in 8 years, we have $250 million annual hole in the budget that Governor Beshear has provided no plan to fill, and that's a real problem.
Government accountability.
I think the biggest thing there is incentivizing state employees to provide ideas to reduce the cost of government. Because every time I walk into the Capitol, somebody in government has an idea about a way to reduce it. And we've actually taken some of those ideas and implemented them into other plans. Savings to the tune of tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars at this point, that are identified by state employees. And there's great people there with great ideas. They just need somebody to listen and to act.
One of the biggest things, and you guys talked about it a lot at NKU, is the 2015 plan. Mm-hmm. Talk about mm-hmm. that.
Sure. So that's in our education plan. And, you know, we've got a lot of really good things in education, but the biggest thing is we are morally failing the next generation and have been for the last 15 years or so with the cost of higher education. And we've got to get those costs down. And our guarantee is if you get a 4-year degree from University of Kentucky or University of Louisville, and you actually get it in 4 years, you will not pay more than $20,000 in tuition and fees. For the regional universities like NKU, if you get a 4-year degree in 4 years, you won't pay more than $15,000 in tuition and fees. And an affordable higher education is critical. We have too many kids graduating with degrees in areas that they can't use, having run up so much debt that they can't service the debt, or worse, spending 6 or 7 years in college and not getting a degree, but still having a tremendous amount of debt. So we've got to reduce the amount of debt that our students are graduating with.
So the plan essentially cuts a 4-year cost in half.
Mm-hmm.
Your campaign has said it's revenue neutral.
Yes.
Does that math work?
Absolutely. So if you look right now, the measurement for success is the 7-year graduation rate for a 4-year degree. So if you take that 7 years and put that in the 4 years, take the same amount of dollars per student and apply it in four, okay? Plus, those kids get out and they're in the revenue, the tax revenue that's generated from them for those 3 additional years. You basically are reinvesting that revenue in their education. And so then we're not even talking about the back end costs of the fact that they will have higher lifetime earning potentials as a result. That's a positive to the student and a positive to the Commonwealth.
Sure.
In addition, we're not talking about the fact that if all of a sudden, instead of graduating kids in 7 years, you're graduating from four, that means there's fewer demands on the college campuses, so fewer needs for buildings, for dorms, for administrators, for everything that goes into driving that cost of higher education. So you're shrinking all those costs, and those costs aren't even accounted for in this. You can just do it between tax revenue and the decrease in the cycle of the kid being in school.
And a big part of your plan also is to keep these students in Kentucky after they graduate.
Absolutely, and that gets to the especially the technical education side of it, because we've proposed a no-cost 2-year associate's degree as long as you finish it within 3 years. And what we're doing is, for employers who hire kids out of KCTCS, there's a $2,000 tax credit that's given to that employer for each student, but they have to reinvest that money in a signing bonus for that kid to get them to stay here for 2 years. So there's a lot in there about, you know, the importance of being in Kentucky, staying in Kentucky, and incentivizing not only students, but also employers to employ those students.
So back to the five-point plan, mm-hmm. most important bullet point under the plan to grow the middle class.
Earned income tax credit. You know, we are calling for an earned income tax credit that's 10% of the amount of the federal government's earned income tax credit. That lets people keep more of their hard-earned dollars in their pocket. Your economy in any state, your economy in the nation, it's always built around the middle class. Always. And so you've got to grow those people who are in those income brackets, and you've got to give them the ability to reinvest in the community, because the fact is they turn over dollars at a higher rate than anyone else in the economy, which stimulates economic growth. And once again, we can do this in a revenue-neutral way by eliminating things like the film tax credit. We don't need to continue to give multi-million dollar tax breaks to Hollywood producers who come in, don't really create any long-term jobs, frankly, don't create a lot of value for the Commonwealth. Because if you look at the types of films
sure.
that are generated using this credit, more times than not, they perpetuate negative stereotypes about Kentucky. But there's all kinds of these areas where we can eliminate, make this revenue neutral, invest in our own middle class right here, and advance the cause.
It seems like this governor loves to put out press releases when a new movie comes to Kentucky. Not so on the Comer McDaniel ticket.
No, and you saw me vote against the film tax credit last year
right.
as well.
Plan to invest in Kentucky's future.
Reduce the amount of debt. You know, and that's in large part how we pay for a lot of the things that we're doing here. We have accumulated too much debt in this state, both in the pension plans and in the bonded indebtedness. And we need to get that down. We need to provide a sustainable economy for the future, and we'll do that.
Finally, do you understand why people say, you know, before somebody runs for something, why they say that good people don't run for office?
Sure. And the same reason that they say that is why good people have to run for office. It is a painful process in some ways, but the rewards are great. They're absolutely tremendous. You know, we actually, at the other end of our headquarters building here, we, at the base of the flagpole, we have a plaque. In that plaque, we went through the employees of the company and we said, give us the names of any of your friends that were, or family that were killed fighting overseas. And they're sitting there on that plaque outside of our flagpole. And when I go out there, and I do frequently, go out and you look at that, you realize the costs of being in government and the costs of running for office are nowhere near as high as the cost of those guys on that plaque paid. And so there are discomforts with this, but it pales into comparison to what people sacrifice to give this to us.
So May 20th, that's the day after the primary election. What's your focus at that point?
Getting out on a job site and pouring concrete and then going out to my farm and clearing brush. And you know, the big thing will be beginning to put infrastructure in place for the general election. We have great people on this campaign who have worked very hard. And we've got to get that infrastructure in place. We've got to make sure that we're ready for November. Because the fact is, we cannot afford Jack Conway as governor of this state. We cannot afford Sandy Overly, lieutenant governor of this state. Northern Kentucky is very familiar with what she did last session. And, you know, we've got to move forward.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate your time being on Fort Thomas Matters Radio. Remember, the primary election is May 19th, which is about a week away. Please turn out the vote. No matter who your candidate is, it is important that you do get out and vote so that Northern Kentucky can get a little bit more respect in Frankfort. And by going to the polls, that is how we are going to show Frankfort that we are for real. Once again, thank you to Chris McDaniel. For Chris, this is Mark Collier with Fort Thomas Matters Radio. Once again, brought to you by Omega Processing Solutions and City Barbecue.
on my way in North Carolina, staring up the road and pray to God I see headlights.